You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to a very special edition of the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, joined alongside Mr. Triple-Double himself, Connor Morissette, and we have a very special guest, new USC defensive coordinator Danton Lynn is joining us remotely. He just got off the practice field over there at USC. Thanks, Coach, for coming on. Appreciate you spending some time.
Thank you guys for having me.
Let's go ahead. So you were just saying we're going on the air last walkthrough. So what, these are kind of like off-season sort of preparations for spring ball, or what were you kind of doing today?
Yeah, so we get a handful of meetings and walkthroughs with the guys where we can kind of introduce the defense. We have small installs, and then we'll go on the field for a little bit and kind of walk through everything. So this was our last one before spring break.
Coach, I think I might know the answer to this already. Asked you when you spoke to the media a few weeks ago, anyone standing out to you, maybe not in a football sense so far, but in a leadership sense or in the weight room during those beach workouts, anyone catching your eye so far?
You know what? I'll give you a little bit more than I gave you last time. I'll give you a position group. I've been really impressed with the defensive line and just how they've been working in the weight room, nutrition wise, and changing their bodies. I'm excited to see what that group does this spring.
That's got to get USC fans excited. They love the weight room. I mean, the defensive line stuff. What's it been like? About 3 months on the job? December 1st, you came in. What's this first quarter of your USC coaching career sort of been like?
It's been great. You know, the majority of it to start was a lot of recruiting. You know, as soon as I got the job, we were on the road securing the 24 class. Then we got to come back in the office for a couple of weeks. Then we were back out on the road again for the 25s. So now that we're back in the office, just getting prepared for spring ball, you know, we've been spending a lot of time with the staff, hashing out the installs, trying to get through as much of the playbook as we can. But it's been going great.
I asked you about your recruiting pitch way back when we first met with you via Zoom when you were first hired, Danton, and it sounds like talking to recruits, a lot of your pitches, I've been in the NFL, I know what it takes to get you there. When you go into the living room of a recruit, what do you say to that family and that player?
The biggest thing, I just want them to know that this is going to be an environment to where, A, they're going to get developed, and B, they're going to be prepared to go to the NFL from a schematic standpoint, from a way we teach, a way we practice, a way we do things on the field. We want those guys to be as prepared as possible for the next level.
Coach Lynn, I think when we look at defenses, there's different ways you can kind of rank them? There's different metrics, you know, scoring defense, total yards. Are there any metrics that you sort of look to? I think there's more advanced ones like yards per play given up, things like that. What kind of metrics do you kind of use to sort of judge how well the defense is doing?
You know, you're right. There's a lot of different ones, and then there's some that are different by situation. But overall, I mean, at the end of the day, keeping them out of the end zone and not giving up points is the most important thing, especially in the way that college is played now. Like, you're playing a bunch of different offenses, a bunch of different types of offenses. So sometimes you need to play a different style of defense. So there might be games where you might give up a little bit more on the ground to help out somewhere else. There might be games where, you know what, we're stopping the run by any means necessary. So it just depends. I think each week's a little bit different, but at the end of the day, you want to keep them out of the end zone.
And a real quick follow-up on that. When you're the defensive coordinator for a team that has a very prolific offense versus a team that maybe is like more plodding, and, you know, Lincoln mm-hmm. Riley's top five offenses all the time, they're scoring a lot. I mean, does that change your philosophy at all? What kind of challenges does that put on you on the defensive side? Like, if you were, you know, Iowa's defensive coordinator, things are a lot easier when you're just not scoring that much. It's just the lower scoring games when Lincoln Riley, you know, you're going to score a lot of points. It kind of changes, I guess, the feel of the game.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting knowing that you have an offense that could score at any point. But at the same time, you know that when that other offense gets the ball, they're going to be in attack mode all game. Okay. And, you know, that's something that we have to be prepared for.
Coach, without giving too much away schematically, obviously, when you're working with the linebackers, can we expect the names of those positions? Like, is it going to be a Mike and a Will? Is there like a Jack linebacker, a Buck linebacker, a Star linebacker? I know that stuff all sort of can mean the same thing potentially, mm-hmm. but take me through how you envision the linebacker group playing out just in terms of what you're going to call those guys.
So when we're in nickel, we'll have two linebackers on the field. We'll have a Mike and a Will. And then we'll also have a package where we have three inside and backers on the field. Then we'll have a Sam, a Mike, and a Will.
So that is that the nickels kind of be the base package then most of the time, right? That's just kind of the way college football is right now.
Yeah. You know, we don't call it base, but because of the teams you play, they're in 11 personnel, they're in 10 personnel. You end up being in some type of sub package the majority of the game.
What does the Sam linebacker do, and what ideally does that body type look like?
So the Sam linebacker, we would take the nickel out of the game, and the Sam linebacker would literally just replace him. From a responsibility standpoint, the Sam and the Will have a lot of the same responsibilities. One's just to the field, one's to the boundary, so you're dealing with a lot more space. But you obviously have to be able to play in space, and then having length just because of all the field you have to uncover helps.
You made the successful transition from, you know, NFL assistant to a coordinator in college. And over the years, we've seen a lot of coaches sort of go, it could be head coaches, whatever, coming from the NFL to college. You have so much more time with players in the NFL. It's their jobs. Mm-hmm. These are men. And these aren't college students like you're coaching now. It seemed like you adapted to that pretty quickly, where you can't just throw, you know, a 4-inch playbook at these guys and expect them to do it. Like, what was that sort of like? And how did you, I mean, I guess, how did you kind of know that you needed to, I don't want to say dumb things down, but it has to be kind of simpler for college guys just because you just don't have the hours that you would have to kind of study everything in the NFL.
Yeah. When I first got to in college, just looking at the initial schedule and just seeing, like, you're right, you don't have near as much time with these guys, whether it's in the meeting room, whether it's walkthroughs. You just have way more times with guys in the NFL. So I knew we were going to move slower. It really wasn't until we got on the field that I started really interacting with the players and coaching with the players that it hit me, like, all right, like, you know, these are kids, you know. So and you take for granted what these kids know and don't know. And after the first week of spring ball, I had to just reset my mind. And you have to assume that these kids don't know anything because you don't know what their background is. You don't know what they've been taught, what they haven't been taught. So it felt like it made me a way better coach because I've never had to teach it from literally the very, very ground up. I've always been just trying to maximize each individual's and talent. So overall, it was a great experience for me. I feel like it made me a way better coach.
Have you been able to get into the nitty gritty of what practices will look like with Coach Riley and Coach Nua, guys who were there last season? I know you won't be able to speak to what mm-hmm. USC did a year ago, but is there anything fans can expect to be different? Will practices be more physical? Just what will practice look like with you running the defense?
We have not talked about exactly practice stuff yet. As we're getting closer to spring ball, we'll be having those conversations soon.
Coach, let's take it back to your recruitment. I know way back when you chose Penn State, but USC was involved as well. How come you ultimately decided on Penn State, and why didn't you pick USC?
Yeah, a lot of fans in the peristyle. They want to know. Like, so I've been doing this since 1996. USCfootball.com has been around, so it's been a while. But there's a lot of old school USC fans that followed all the recruiting battles. So, like, when a coach like you came up, they were, oh, remember when, you know, he was being recruited. So people are really interested in this. So that's why the question's coming up.
I was getting recruited, and I took an unofficial out to SC. And then they kind of cooled off me for a little bit and didn't talk to me for a while. And then they tried to come in hot at the end. And at that point, I had a really good relationship with the staff at Penn State. I'd been up there a handful of times, and I just felt like between football and life outside of ball, that was the right school for me at that point.
What did you learn from your recruiting process that you now apply when you're recruiting athletes?
It's tough to say because recruiting now is so different. You know, I was kind of on that fringe age range where I still mailed out highlight tapes. You know, now it's just completely different. You know, the conversations you have with kids are completely different, but it's still, it comes down to development, and it comes down to.
We might have lost him. You there, Coach? Well, let me try to get him back. Connor, if you want to talk for a second.
Sure, you got to love live radio, but how about Danton? Oh, we got
I
back?
Think we're back, yeah. Sorry,
we lost there we go. Second, sorry about that.
No worries.
Sorry, I answered the question, but it froze, so I don't know how much you guys heard or how much you didn't.
Just to begin, if you want to repeat that, that would be great. Sorry about that.
All right, so can you repeat the question again?
Sure, just I was the last one, right, about what you'd learned during your recruiting process. And then when it cut out before, you were talking about just the differences in how you'd sent out tape, and now it's totally different than I think it cut out there.
Yeah, I would say the focus of it's still just player development. You know, whether it's I'm at their high school, at their home, or they're here on campus, I just want them to get a good feel for me as a person, and then just for the coaching staff and for what to expect when they get here. You know, I don't want to sell something and then they get here and it's something completely indifferent. You know, we try to be ourselves and we try to show them exactly what they're going to get.
The recruiting process obviously has changed a lot since you were around, and just in the last, you know, if you were a coach 3 years ago in college, it would be different. Yeah. It's almost like, well, those apocalyptic movies, maybe it's a terrible analogy, but like you see the kid, it's like 10 years in the apocalypse, the kid's 8 years old, that's all he knows is the apocalypse. You came in the middle of NIL transfer portal, like, you were sort of bored in the chaos time as far as a college coach goes. So what have you kind of learned from that? Because it's definitely a lot different than it was when, you know, you were going through this, but it's different than it was, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah. The recruiting part of it is different just because your conversations with kids are a little bit different. But as far as the roster and the transfers in and out, coming from the NFL, you know, that's what we're accustomed to. There's been a handful of times where you'll meet a guy on Monday, he starts for you on Sunday, and then he's gone that next week. So you know, we're used to that in the NFL. So as far as the roster and changing before spring, after spring, after the fall, I'm accustomed to that. But as far as it changes the way you have to recruit, it does.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but I believe the first player you offered when you got to USC was Jaden Walker, who ultimately flipped from Michigan State to USC to sign with the Trojans. What led to you offering him? What did you like about his game?
His versatility, his size, and then just the way he plays, especially with us going into the Big Ten. Like, that's a Big Ten linebacker. And he has the versatility and skill set to where he can play a handful of positions on our defense. So we're excited just to see his growth and development in the program.
We had a question in the chat. It says, Coach, what do you say to people that think there may be too many chefs in the kitchen? The defensive staff is truly loaded. So there's a lot of, you guys hire a lot of qualified, you know, coaches there. I mean, you're going to be the voice in that room, but I guess it's come up in USC circles. People have kind of talked about it, maybe worried that there's too many like high powered coaches in there. I don't know. It seems like a good problem to have, but any thoughts on that?
That's a good problem to have to me. I think it'd be different if we had too many people. You know, I do think you could have too many people, but with in college, you can only have a handful of assistants. So, you know, this is the smallest staff I've been a part of. And then I felt the staffs are bigger, but no, we have a very experienced staff. And just for me personally, I love the experience. You know, I haven't even been in college for a year yet. I got to UCLA mid-March last year.
Wow.
So, to have experienced head coaches, to have experienced coordinators, to be able to collaborate with is awesome.
You came from Baltimore, and it seems like Jim Harbaugh and his brother had some kind of a symbiotic relationship there where coaches would sort of go back and forth. Do you see that being something that could happen in, you know, at USC as well, where you're sort of like, you know, Harbaugh's with the Chargers now. Maybe there's coaches that could kind of go back and forth, or your relationship with the Ravens is – is that something that can kind of benefit a college program where you have these NFL ties and maybe coaches come down or coaches go up to, I don't know, like training is the right word, but it seems like, you know, it seems to kind of help both programs.
You know, I think in any time someone's doing something similar to you, I think you look to those places first. And hopefully if we're playing good defense here, teams that we're playing similar to, hopefully we grab their attention.
Okay.
What's it been like working with some of the new defensive assistant coaches so far? Have you learned anything new from like an Eric Henderson or a Doug Belk or a Matt Entz? Anything come to mind that maybe you weren't doing before that these guys have introduced you to, or just in general, what's it like bonding with that new staff?
It's been great. You know, we're obviously not through the entire playbook yet, but everything we've hashed out in here, we feel like we're making the defense as good as we can, whether it's terminology, whether it's techniques, whether it's how we're tying in our coverages with the front. We've had ideas from everywhere. You know, it's tough to just pinpoint one thing, but it's been very collaborative.
I don't know if Lincoln Riley talked to you about this, but last year in the transfer portal, 2022, Dorian Singer kind of went off on USC for Arizona. And USC ends up getting him. It's like he had a huge game against USC. You pretty much shut USC down in the UCLA game. And like, maybe is that something that kind of got his attention, or is that something that has come up at all when you guys have talked? Because he must have been impressed with the job you did, because you guys did a really good job when you played USC.
You know, we talked about the game a little bit, but not much. You know, we spend most of our time talking about the future.
Okay.
We get a lot of questions on our message board about Eric Gentry and just how he's sort of a unicorn because of his size. Have you given much thought as to where exactly you think his best role is? We heard Coach Entz talk about if he beefs up a little bit, middle linebacker probably is his best spot. What do you think about Eric Gentry's role going forward?
I mean, from an athletic standpoint, you know, he's a guy that can play Sam, Mike, or Will from an athletic standpoint. So I'm excited to see him in person this spring and just to see how he fits in this defense, because he has a unique skill set and he has some stuff that you can't coach. So, you know, he has to learn the scheme, and, you know, we'll kind of see as we're on the field where he fits in. But he's a guy that he's not just going to be doing one thing. You know, he's a guy that can do too many things, and we're going to make sure that we try to maximize his skill set.
So I'll be the chat one. Do you think he's going to gain significant weight? Would you like to see him put more weight on?
He's already gained some weight since I've been here, and hopefully it keeps on going up. Absolutely.
Right. What have you learned from Lincoln Riley so far, a guy who's had a lot of success at the college level? Haven't been there too long so far, but anything stand out, lessons learned from the head coach?
I mean, I just kind of sit back and observe and just try to learn as much as I can as far as how he manages the team, how he manages the recruiting department, how he deals with the media. I mean, being a college coach, there's a lot that goes into that. And he does a great job, not only being the offensive coordinator, but still being the CEO of the entire team, which is hard to do. So I just kind of sit back and I just try to soak everything in.
We've catched little videos on social media with guys doing offseason workouts and stuff. How's it been working with the new staff and, you know, new group of players and kind of getting them motivated? I know you guys had a beach workout and things. Mm-hmm. What has it been like the last couple of months of you doing these offseason workouts?
It's been good. I would say the last week, you know, we've had earlier lifts and there's been a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. It's fun being around the guys and just seeing their growth and change since I got here, as far as guys getting bigger, guys getting faster. You know, there's just a handful of guys that just look different. So it's very exciting to see.
you're all about the future, Coach, and that makes sense. I do want to ask one other thing about last season. If the Bears in the NFL were to call you and say, hey, what was it like game planning for Caleb Williams the week before you played him? Should we take him with the number one overall pick? Maybe that second question you don't have to answer, but what was it like game planning for a guy who has the potential to be the number one pick in the draft in a couple months?
I mean, it was tough. He can make every throw. When you think you have him in the pocket, you don't. Play with the play's never over with a guy like him. So it was very, very tough. We spent a lot of time plastering. Like I said, the play is never over with him. Some of the plays he made on tape were unbelievable.
The spring ball's coming up. What's sort of like the goals for you guys? You know, you got a couple weeks left, I guess. Yeah, 2 weeks left until less than 2 weeks till spring ball starts. Like, what are the kind of goals getting into it? Because I know you said you're going to, you know, install is going to be slow. It's not going to be something that takes, it's going to take a little while. But what are you trying to get the guys ready for when they hit that practice field for the first time?
We're not going to get our entire defense in this spring, but we want to get our core concepts in. And we want the guys to have a good grasp of the core concepts. Because once you get a good grasp of those are the same concepts that we'll build off of in the fall. So that's our main goal, is just to introduce those core concepts and to really find out at the end of spring, like, what's our identity going to be?
With spring break coming up next week, you got any plans, Coach? Can you get away or do you have to hit the recruiting trail?
I'm going to go to Texas for a couple of days to see some family, and then I'll be back here in Southern California.
Did you settle on a place to live yet and everything? I was like talking to the assistant coaches. Some of you guys, I'm a South Bay guy. We're in the South Bay right now. Goes there. Nice. You know, if you're like Lincoln Riley money, you're going to, to PV or whatever. But if you found a home here in Southern California where you like to stay?
I have not yet. So I was living in Playa Vista. And originally we were thinking about staying there, but they're not going to extend our lease. So our lease ends in April. So we have to move. And my wife is from Long Beach, so we're looking a little south. We're actually looking in the South Bay.
Yeah, there you go. See, I'm trying to get Connor to come down here. Like, you know, we guys all that place. South Bay's good. Manhattan Beach, you'll be fine.
Well, it's beautiful there. It's expensive, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's nice. For the team, the last 2 years, the offense has been really good. The USC's defense has just not been up to snuff, and that's part of the reason why they're bringing you in here. A bunch of these guys have been around, and you hear stuff on social media. You hear people say, "Oh, the defense is bad. The defense is bad." What have you assessed as far as like morale for some of these guys, and how do you think that's changed since you and the new staff members have kind of come in to kind of pick up morale a little bit?
I think the guys have a chip on their shoulder. I think they ended the season strong, and they're excited to go into next year and prove everybody wrong.
Were you at the beach workout the other day, Coach? That looked like a big morale booster.
I was, yeah. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed pretty cool. Like, what does that do? I mean, you're on the beach. I mean, working out in the sand I play beach volleyball. It's definitely a good workout, but is it more about the team bonding than the actual physical workout?
Yeah. I mean, it was the bus ride out there. We get out there, it's pitch black. By the time we're done, the sun's out. And the workouts are hard. They're very, very hard. And I just think, you get a group of guys that are going through all that. And to end it like that, I think was awesome. And like you said, just brought the team together.
Have you tried the sand dunes in Manhattan Beach? That's like, I think it's 10 stories. Have you done that one yet?
I have not, no.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good one. Yeah, some of the high school coaches would do it. It's definitely difficult. It's a really steep Yeah, I think it's 10-story, like, sand incline and stuff. So, yeah. But
yeah, the sand is no joke, man. That stuff's hard.
It's pretty
good. It is hard.
Sweet. Well, Coach Lynn, we really appreciate you spending some time. I know it's you got a busy schedule and everything over there, so we wanted to get to meet you, and it was great to have you on. Wishing you best of luck. I know USC fans are really excited. They really want to cheer for a great defense, so they're rooting for you, I know.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Denton Lynn. No social media, right? Do you do Instagram or not Twitter? Or?
I do Instagram, yeah. Yep.
Okay, but you're not a Twitter guy or X guy?
I just got a Twitter. I don't have a picture up yet, but I'm going to get going soon.
You're an egg? Nice. So mostly Instagram stuff?
Mostly Instagram,
okay, yeah. What's your – we can shout it out to everybody. What's your –
Just Denton Lynn, D-A-N-T-O-N-L-Y-N-N.
Nice. All right. Well, Denton Lynn, we really appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me.
All right. Take care, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Everyone else, we will be back in a minute. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All righty. Sorry. Oops. Sorry, a little technical difficulties there. We are back in the Peristyle Podcast. We can let Denton Lynn go. Appreciate him coming in. Yeah, you could kind of hear him talking. I was like, I needed to cut that off. That was cool, though. Good. Got a lot of questions in for him. It's good to just kind of get his insights on what was going on. So what were your thoughts, Connor?
Well, he said from day one, versatility is so important. So it's so awesome to hear him talk about how Eric Gentry could play any of the linebacker spots. And when I asked him about Jaden Walker, a guy who he offered, it seemed like he was committed to Michigan State and USC was interested. But when Danton Lynn came, I think it's pretty clear he really fit the bill of a Danton Lynn versatile player. So I think that's really cool to see. And then the defensive line, that what he started talking about.
To say that right off the bat. That's good.
He's been most impressed with that group. I hope it wasn't coach speak. Sometimes, everyone's going to be looking at that defensive line. So maybe gave him a little shot in the arm there. But, of course, anytime you can get some positive words out about a position group that a lot of people are going to be looking at this year, I think that's encouraging. So that was huge.
Smedley in the chat says, I really like his demeanor. I would play for him. Yeah, I would too. He's someone that I think you're not worried about him yelling at you. I mean, that probably could happen too, but you're just worried about like disappointing him and stuff. So yeah, I love his demeanor. I just think to make that transition from the NFL to college, so many NFL guys are just like, here's what we do in the NFL. And you're like, it's overwhelming to college kids. I think we go back to, Norm Chow would have offenses that look complicated and they were simple to run. And I think you have to have that sort of philosophy where it needs to be somewhat simple for these players to be able to execute it the way you want. And then the bonus is if it looks more complicated, it's not easy to figure out. And I think it seems like he's kind of got that secret sauce there going where it didn't look like UCLA players were confused. Like they were just doing it where USC players look like they're confused all year. So you can't have that. You got to do something different. And I think now you're seeing that. I'm curious. It seems like the morale is higher. That's why I asked him about that, because you can't hear the defense sucks, the defense sucks, the defense sucks for 2 years and feel good about yourself. And it seems like this is sort of new life for the defense. They're feeling better about it.
Absolutely. I think the two biggest challenges facing Danton Lynn this year are what can you get from the defensive line? Because on paper, UCLA's was better than USC's is going to be, bar some crazy additions in the transfer portal. And then USC's schedule is much tougher than UCLA's was last year. So Lynn had two really important things working for him. He inherited a really good defensive line group and just an easy schedule. That's what happened to happen. can't talk. In his first year at UCLA, it's going to be a little bit different at USC, and I want to see how he responds to that. We have, what, like 6 months until the first game, so we'll have plenty of time to break down what we think is going to happen. I'm really looking forward to seeing what will happen when that first game kicks off against LSU.
For sure, but we only have like 2 weeks till spring ball starts. Kevin says, I'm very excited for spring football, as are all of us. We're excited as well, and we can't wait to see that. We kind of came in hot because we had to start the, you know, we went live with Denton Lynn, so we didn't do our regular, I did my like, hello Trojans fans, we did do all that kind of regular intro, but we can leave that stuff out. But just to let people know, we are live on YouTube, and we had a whole bunch of people in the chat, so thank you for that. And I put at least one or two questions up there from the chat for Denton Lynn, and I put a couple of the comments up there as well. So if you're live with us and you have some questions or comments, just put in there, and I will star your questions, and we'll get to it a little bit later. And if you have any comments, we'll try to put them up on the screen. And I do want to thank our sponsor. I should ask Denton Lynn about Trader Joe's. He's going to be a South Bay guy. I think he'll probably go to the Manhattan Beach Trader Joe's. Great stuff. I know Chris is a huge fan of the orange chicken. So the other night, Connor, I did a little combo. I did orange chicken in the air fryer, and that was cool. And then I did there was vegetable fried rice in a skillet on the stove. So I did the vegetable fried rice with the orange chicken. So I kind of made my own little Panda Express thing going, and it was good. It was good stuff. So a lot of good stuff over at Trader Joe's. Make sure you go check it out. But yeah, I'm sure Denton Lynn loves Trader Joe's. I should ask him about it.
Probably, yeah. That meal is probably healthier than Panda Express too. So kudos.
I would think so, but who knows? But I sometimes you make the orange chicken, I'll like eat the whole thing. Like it's probably not good. I mean, it's good. It's just you probably shouldn't eat. That's not one portion meal, but it split up into two, so that was good. It was two hearty meals from that. So make sure you go check all that over at Trader Joe's. Okay. Okay, kind of. Yeah, because we had to come in pretty hot for that. So if you're listening on across the podcast platforms, thank you for doing that. You can review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I don't think we've had a new review on Apple Podcasts for a little while. So if you want to do that and leave us 5 stars on Spotify, wherever you listen. I think I checked our analytics recently. Apple Podcasts is the most popular way to consume the Peristyle podcast. And I think Spotify is number two. So two things that I use. So, but yeah. Do you listen to podcasts much? Do you do Apple Podcasts? What do you do?
I'm Spotify.
You're Spotify. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. My car has like an Apple Podcast. Well, it has both. It has like an app for podcasts, Apple Podcasts and stuff. So I've been kind of using that. So, but yeah, so if you have any questions, just start in the chat and we would like to get to it. But we got some other, we got some kind of, I don't know if it's breaking, but we got news. USC hired a new running backs coach. That's not the plural. So Kyle McDonald heads off to aforementioned Jim Harbaugh and the Los Angeles Chargers. And USC brings in TCU's running back coach, Anthony Jones Jr. So any thoughts on the new hire, Connor?
Well, I like that Lincoln could call his brother Garrett and say, hey, you worked with this guy the year you made the national title game at TCU. What kind of a coach is he? Because his track record is great. He has a lot of NFL guys who he's helped tutor, get him to that next level from his time at Memphis and then TCU. And I'm sure Garrett Riley said, this guy's great. He'd really help you out. So I think that's key because Lincoln had a personal connection, even though it wasn't direct to Jones. And we can get into some of the guys he's coached. I mean, Ryan, you talked about it. If you play fantasy football, you're going to know a lot of these guys. He had Kenneth Gainwell at Memphis, Antonio Gibson, Darrell Henderson, Tony Pollard, and at TCU, he had some really good guys as well. So I really like what he's done in the past. I enjoyed seeing him already at USC's practices based on some of the social media posts I've seen. I try to poke holes in things. I don't see any reason to poke holes in this hire. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's great. We haven't got to talk to him yet. I had Tony Pollard on my fantasy team, and he didn't do as well this year. So I want to talk to him about that. Like maybe.
And you know, everyone was so high on him at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, because yeah, you know,
Zeke was gone.
It's so funny. I had him and Kelsey, and he was by like number. It was the number 4 pick in the draft or something. It's a PPR league, And I still end up winning, even those two had like subpar years. But I had like CeeDee Lamb, and he was really good. And they had a bunch of guys that were good. But yeah, so I don't think he's going to care. That, but yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see all those. You know, it's the running back rooms in the NFL have changed. And you got like two or three guys that can play a lot. But guys like Gainwell, like you recognize them. Like they'll come in and have like great stretches of games. And maybe they're not the number one guy, but they just don't, it's a, you don't have a lot of that, like Saquon Barkley's as much anymore, you know? You know, where you have a Christian McCaffrey and he's like the main dude. There's a lot of times it's two, three guys, they're sharing, you know, they have different roles and things like that. But a bunch of the guys he's coached have, are in those roles, like important roles on different NFL teams. And when you can recognize that many dudes and you're coaching at Memphis and TCU, like that says something.
Totally. I like, too, that he was a high school coach for 10 years before.
Yeah.
I think anytime you can be involved in high school football, you're going to learn so much, whether it's coaching. I think even in the media, that applies. I covered high school football for a long time. You just learn really valuable lessons that can help you as you progress. I feel very similarly about that. And that, to me, I think he really developed his craft there. And then the track record at Memphis and TCU speaks for itself. Not everyone has this path where they're a graduate assistant and then they start moving up that quickly. Some people, they do have to go back to high school, and it worked really well for him. I love that. I think that's really important. It reminds me of like when Eric Henderson shouted out his high school coach when he was speaking to us. Just being involved in that space, I think, can really help in recruiting and really means a lot to me.
When it's hard to put a finger on, you know, recruiting prowess sometimes. You're like, you're not really sure, but sometimes – you see guys coming out of the gate, like we saw with Coach Henney, right? Like Eric Henderson, you just, without seeing results, you're like, okay, that guy's going to be a dog recruiter. He's going to be really good on the recruiting trail. I kind of get the feeling Jones will be too. Like, what, any thoughts on his early sort of, you know, putting offers and things out there and what he's done on social media and everything?
I believe he offered one running back from Texas, a three-star kid so far. I see no reason for him, like, the defensive staff, their whole pitch is we're going to develop. And USC, we'll talk about NIL too, but our main thing is development. And I think that Anthony Jones fits into that perfectly as well. Just look at the track record. You talk about Eric Henderson. Hey, look, I coached Aaron Donald for all these years. You talk about Anthony Jones. I put a running back in the NFL every year that I have been a college running backs coach. He also was the director of scouting at Memphis. So I think he does have a lot of recruiting chops, but to the people who are like, we need five stars and we got to get up in these recruiting rankings, that's the most important thing. Look for Jones to potentially try to find some diamonds in the rough, develop them. And I think at running back, that's one of the positions where you can get away with that. You don't necessarily need a five-star guy because that position, it just, there's so much wear and tear. This year, it looks like Quentin Joyner will probably be the number two running back for USC, a younger guy. You can throw people into the fire, and if they're ready, you use them, and the next year you probably move on just because it's such a quick shelf life for those running backs.
And I think development's certainly important, but a lot of it is even before that with the evaluations, because if you're looking at it's sort of like identifying a stock, you know what Apple is or whatever, but oh, there's tech company that, you know, it could be good, it could be, and if you're good at saying that one's going to blow up, you know, they're going to sign a deal with Apple and it's going to, they're going to go from a three-star to a high four-star, you sort of get a head start where if you see the potential there, you recruit that kid instead of another three-star that you're like, I think he's already maxed out. And so I think the evaluation part of it's big, sort of gets you a leg up, and then the development kind of on top of that, you can build even more. And it seems like that's what you're talking about here. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't think you're saying they can't go get the high four and five-star guys. I think they can, but a lot of it too is sort of like you're building the program back up. And if you can identify that what everyone thinks is a three-star and you realize, no, the ceiling's much higher. We can turn that guy into an All-American and a, you know, early draft pick. That's fine too. I know USC fan, you'd rather have just the five-star guy, but you'd rather have the guy that becomes the, you know, second round draft pick as opposed to the guy that flames out and never does anything.
I also do think out of every position on offense and defense in football, the easiest one to plug and play from the transfer portal is running back. We've seen USC have a lot of success the last couple of years with transfer running backs.
Yes.
I just think because give them the ball and let him go to work. Of course, you need to know the offense and know what you're doing out there. It's just a little bit easier than some of these other positions. And that has helped, too, with USC not recruiting at the level at the running back spot of old. And I think based on what's happened these last couple cycles, if you're a transfer looking to play 1 year and go to the NFL, how can you not like what USC's doing? And Anthony Jones, he's not going to be a detriment to that. If anything, he'll probably have more guys interested because of his track record. So overall, I think running back, there are a lot of different options to have success, and we've seen USC take some of those options in the past.
100%. That's a great segue, I would say. When you're going to talk about transfer running backs, go to Marshawn Lloyd. And him and seven other USC players were at the NFL Combine last week. I'm going to be honest, didn't watch a minute of it. I usually watch some. They changed it to the evenings now, right? It used to be like a daytime thing. I think they tried to make it more of an event. Watched some highlights and things and read some of the interviews and stuff. But overall kind of thoughts on how USC players did at the Combine. You can start wherever you want. If you want Caleb Williams first and the other guys, or however you want to do it.
Sure. Not much to talk about with Caleb Williams because he didn't really do anything, but he did talk to the media and he got a chance to meet with a bunch of teams. I'm sure a lot of USC fans saw this, but Caleb all chipper goes up to the podium. And then the first question, this total tool bag reporter goes, are you afraid to compete?
Total tool bag.
Just a guy who's like, just everything that's wrong with sports journalism. And Caleb took that question like a professional and just said, no, and gave a good response. But that was certainly noteworthy. I just thought overall, I love Caleb's vibe at the Combine. He showed up, didn't have a nice haircut. He was a little scruffy. He was there for business. It was a business trip. And I think his team has done a really nice job of preparing him for this whole circus of being the potential number one draft pick and facing all these weird questions. I thought he answered everything really well. Let the tape speak for itself. He'll throw and do the medicals when he visits with teams. I don't have a big problem with that. There was a big beef about, oh, he's not going to do the medicals. That's never happened before. And then he clarified and said, I don't want everyone to have my medicals, but when I meet with a team, they can get them. So that to me seems fine. If only one or two teams have a chance of drafting him, why do you have to give everyone that information? That didn't really bother me like it bothered some people. So I thought he handled it really well, and I'm excited to see how he does at USC's Pro Day in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I thought he handled all of that very well. And we had a USC media luncheon yesterday. Katie Ryan, in the sports information department, met some of the media, and it was cool. And she's been to the last couple of combines and had talked about, like, people give her calls and, like, we want to know, like, behind the scenes. And we've heard a lot of questions when scouts and teams are looking at players, especially potential high draft picks. They could call their kindergarten teacher. They could call, whatever. We made jokes that maybe they'll call Chris Trevino because he coached Caleb Williams as a swimming instructor. So, but you want to kind of find out how, what kind of person is he in the locker room, how they, and if you call people that are there, you might, get the, rosy answers. It's like you're not sure if you're going to get the right thing. But if you look at, what was his interaction with Brendan Rice, when how he embraces his teammates, the way he celebrated with Miller Moss at the Holiday Bowl when he wasn't playing. And it's like, are you doing that for show? No, he was as happy as anybody in that stadium for Miller Moss throwing six touchdown passes, And I think that's the kind of stuff you take away from if you're worried about character or things like that. It's like, what's going when the camera's not rolling? What are you doing? And everything we've seen, by all accounts, is he's doing the right thing, not just when the spotlight's on him. It's all the time. And I think a lot of that got conveyed during the combine. So if anyone was sort of worried about him, and there's not that many teams are going to be thinking about him because they're not going to be able to draft him, I think that he sort of put any of those fears to rest.
I like Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk. Not everyone likes him. I'm a big fan. And he spoke with Caleb for 10 minutes, and then he tweeted, the Bears have their new franchise quarterback. He was that impressed with them. So he really won the speaking portion of the scouting combine. And Ryan, I've said it before on the show, to me, the only red flag that really makes me not want, or red flags make me really not want to draft someone, would be if they don't work hard or if they have like a criminal background. And I've watched the Patriots Dynasty on Apple TV. They just had the Aaron Hernandez episode, and there were some serious red flags with that guy, and the Patriots still took him. That obviously ended up being a mistake. And with Caleb Williams, the guy works so hard and, of course, has none of those other concerns. The other things with him, I think they're so minuscule. Okay, he cried one time, and maybe at some point his camp had some questions about, hey, because I'm the potential number one pick, could I maybe get equity in a team? And we still don't know if that was true or not.
I don't buy that much, but
that sort of came back up this week, and people reported that they talked about it. But so what if they talked about it? Is that really newsworthy? If me and you have a conversation, hey, let's change USCfootball.com and do this, and then we decide not to do it, is it newsworthy that we had the conversation? I don't think that it is. But either way, the concerns with him, I think, are so small compared to the upside. And if I was a GM or the GM of the Bears, I'd take him in a second. I think it's an easy pick.
Yeah, you're not getting fired by picking him. But I think guys like Taj Washington, Jarrett Kingston, Marshawn Lloyd, I think they seem to help themselves at the combine. Any kind of thoughts on any of the other guys not named Caleb Williams and their combine performances?
Yeah, I thought Lloyd did really well. I think he has the chance to be the second Trojan drafted ahead of Brendan Rice, ahead of Kalen Bullock. If anyone would go before him, maybe it would be Bullock, but I think it's going to be Marshawn Lloyd. I could see some team really liking him and picking him in the second round potentially. I thought it was interesting. Daniel Jeremiah talked about how Kalen Bullock might play cornerback at the next level.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Something people have talked about. And Christian Roland Wallace, who played cornerback at USC, might play safety.
He was big. He's just a thick guy. So they see him and like, okay, that's a safety. You know. Mm-hmm.
And then Jarrett Kingston did really well too. And he's a bottom of the roster guy based on his projections. Who knows? You know, we see all the time guys get that label and go on to do really well. So I think everyone did help themselves. It's good. You never want to be on the list of, okay, like this guy did awful. And I looked at Twitter and I tried to monitor stuff. No one on USC really was in that list of, oh, their hands are really small or their arm, whatever this is called, was
wingspan.
Yeah, wingspan. Yeah. And they didn't run fast. The guys helped themselves, which was great to see.
Yeah. No, probably no freaks. I mean, Caleb Williams, I guess you could say he's just like an athletic, you know, as far as a phenom, quarterback phenom freak, but no one that's like, you know, oh, they have an edge rusher that's 6'5 and 245 and runs a 4.42. They don't have dudes like that. But I think they're a bunch of guys that can be make rosters and be productive. And then, you know, Caleb being the franchise quarterback. Daniel Jeremiah, good friend of the program. He used to, when we used to shoot summer workout videos, like the offseason workouts, when we were allowed to do that, I mean, Daniel would be texting me because he would love watching, because USC, it was like Pete Carroll era, a lot of dudes. He would love watching these work, like these kind of like no pads, you know, their t-shirts or no shirts at all workouts. And he would text me about them and stuff. And he's been on the program before. We'll have to get on. I mean, he's blown up. You know, he's the number one guy at the NFL Network now. But
and he does the Chargers color.
Yeah, and he does Chargers too. He's out in Temecula, I believe, but super nice guy. I used to see him. He would come to like one USC game a year and just see him in the press box and stuff. But we'll have to get him on. Have you met him before?
No, but I'm a big fan.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. We'll definitely get him on. We'll have him come on the show and kind of break down USC's players. He knows the Trojans well. He's been a friend for a while, so it would be great to get him on. I love his work. I wasn't sure if he'd stay at the NFL Network or because he was kind of under Mike Mayock back in the day. And I used to do a TV show on NFL Network. God, this was 2008. They had a college football show on NFL Network. And I was like the USC guy. But I'm in LA, I would go into studio. Everyone else would kind of join remotely. And Mayock was super cool. So it's funny, like when the Raiders hired him, like, oh, I can text the Raiders GM, you know, like whatever. Like, that didn't last or whatever. But
no,
he was like
sort of crashed.
No, he was like the number two guy behind Mayock. And then he just took, you know, he kind of took over. I don't know what Mayock's doing now. I'm not sure.
It's a tangent. It's tough, though. Imagine you're so respected in the media for doing what you're doing, and then a team takes a chance on you, and then you don't do it well. I feel like his word is kind of he had a chance to live out what he was saying on TV, and it didn't really work. So I wonder if his credibility is a little bit shot.
It is interesting to see like the kind of crossover. Like Barton Simmons was, you know, like, you know, head of, you know, 247 recruiting and stuff for a long time, and then takes the
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, and you know, they still stink, but I mean, they're probably doing a better job of evaluating because of his expertise, but, you know, Vanderbilt's still Vanderbilt. But there, we've seen guys on the basketball side, we've seen guys do that too. I think, was it Josh Gershon? He, like, some former, like, 247, I think other maybe rivals and stuff too, like, people that were in those basketball recruiting sort of roles have taken jobs for colleges or NBA. So we've seen some of that kind of crossover there. But yeah, I don't know if he got back now. But yeah, Daniel Jeremiah is great. And we'll have to get him on. So remind me in the chat if I forget about that. We'll do that again for sure. There's also some new rules that have been – so there's a lot, college football is changing by the second. Like, it literally – Danton Lynn came into, like, the recruiting world. First of all, he comes to Chip Kelly's team, and Chip Kelly's not known as a, like, you know, a recruiter. And now NIL is a huge part of it, the transfer portal. Like, there's so many things that are different. He came in late in the process. So I feel like he really was dropped down into, like, chaos when it comes to recruiting. So we'll see. You know, it seems like he's getting his, you know, finding his sea legs here as far as that recruiting and stuff goes. But college football is changing, you know, by the second. And we there are some new rules now, very kind of NFL-like. There's going to be helmet communication, tablets, I believe, on the sidelines are allowed. And then they're going to have a two-minute warning in these games. We kind of shortened the games a little bit last year by not having the clock stop, you know, very college thing, clock stops on a first down. So it was going faster because the clocks weren't stopping. Now you get an extra stoppage, another opportunity for coaches to screw something up, time management, everything, but 2 minute warning there. So any thoughts on, like, the new rules that are being implemented?
Did you mention the signing period in December getting moved up to?
That's another one too. Yeah, that just, we just saw that this morning. I think Ralph Russo from the AP. But that's been the rumor. I mean, we were hoping it just goes back to February and maybe have, like, a June one. But right now it's just they moved it from mid-late December to early December, end of the regular season, between that and the conference championship games, which to me makes no freaking sense, but whatever.
It's because it's before the portal.
Before the portal opens. But December's already crazy. Yeah. You just kept it in December. Like, it's a crazy month. You just moved it around a little bit.
I'll read from a press release. The change, which will become effective December 2024, will move the early signing dates to a 3-calendar-day period beginning the Wednesday following the last FBS regular season contest. There is no change to the regular signing period, which will continue to be the first Wednesday in February through April 1st. So that December period, thinking selfishly, I go home to Massachusetts for Christmas. Maybe now I can get out of town a little bit earlier if the signing day is sooner. But I totally agree with what you're saying, Ryan. This should be – I'm all about student-athlete rights and them having these two opportunities to sign. But what's wrong with February? When all the coaching changes are done?
Yeah.
When the dust is settled with everything for the most part and – it's a little bit later than December, so I get it. And the transfer portal, maybe that could lead to some high school kids getting boxed out if you can take a transfer at the last second instead of a kid you've recruited for a long time. Maybe that screws the kid. But I just think February makes so much more sense today because the coaching carousel is nuts. And we see kids sign, and then the coach leaves, and then they open up their recruitment. Could that all just be avoided by signing in February? Maybe. Is that better than kids kind of getting boxed out because of the transfer portal? Maybe not. So that would be the pushback. But I if I was a high major kid, I'd wait till February to sign.
You want to have as much information as possible. December is the biggest churn month as far as the changing landscape of college football with coaches leaving. There's so, you know, players transferring, entering the portal, all that. There is so much going on. You don't need to have signing day then. I would much rather you wait until early February, like it was before. And then all the players know, like, okay, maybe Chip Kelly would have left afterwards. But
for the most part.
Everything's done by the early February.
Dylan DeBoer is gone and Jed Fish is gone. And
because when those players signed, none of that stuff had happened. Like, all this stuff hadn't happened yet. Yeah. It's, like, insane what's going on. You would like to have them the most information possible. And the reason, and there's always good intentions, right? Like, people, you know, there's unexpected consequences to everything you do. If you make a decision and you're like, I am trying to save the world, you know, and you end up doing something that crashes everything and you ruin the world. Like, your intentions were to save the world, and you end up doing the exact opposite, because there's always these unintended consequences. And the NCAA wanted to allow players to sign if they knew what was going on. They wanted them to sign early. That was the whole point of the early signing period. They thought, and everyone thought, or some people thought, there would just be some players signed then, and most everyone signs in February. But you put it so close to February that it became the de facto signing day. And some schools were on top of it. USC was not one of those schools. They thought it was going to be a regular signing day, and it was not. Other schools knew that we're going to get everybody in December. So that was sort of the unintended consequence of putting it then. Moving it to early December, as a, you know, 2 weeks earlier, doesn't change that. It's still going to be the de facto signing day. I get the early thing, but you could put that in August, where it's like, then we think, at least, only some players are going to sign. Like, if I, you know, I've been committed to USC or whatever school forever, I'm going to sign with them. Fine, you can do that. And then everyone else, you know, you can wait till February. It just makes the most sense. You put it so close to February, it becomes the regular signing day, and you put it during, you know, NFL free agency doesn't happen during the divisional round. You know, like, you're not doing, like, that doesn't, that's not what's going, that's what's happening in college football. Like, it was going to be right in the middle, you know, the playoffs are starting and everything. So you can't do that.
And if you're so sure you're going to get a kid, then what's wrong with June and February? I don't know why December is such a big.
No, yeah, get it out of December. December is the wrong month. And they moved it from one part of December to another. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Unintended consequences. And then they don't go, like, just say we were wrong. Like, this was a screw up. My favorite unintended consequences, like, I don't know if it's a fable or whatever story, but like in India, there were problems. Have you heard this one before? It's like I think it's called the cobra effect. Cobras were, like, you know, killing people, and there was a lot of problems with cobras. And the English government, you know, whether it be in a colony or whatever, comes and they said, okay, we're going to help try to solve the cobra problem. We're going to put a bounty. If you kill a cobra, we will give you whatever, you know, some money. If you brought them a dead cobra, they were going to give you money. Well, seems like that would be good. We're going to have people killing the cobras and bring it in. What ends up happening is people are like, oh, I can make money off this. They're breeding cobras. Like, it created more cobras because they knew that they could get money for killing a cobra. So you wanted to sort of curb the cobra population, and you created a cobra population boom. That wasn't what they intended, but you made it, like, your choice led to that. Like, you know, boom, 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 boom. This was the NCAA's choice. Like, hey, we're going to put it in December. Few people assigned. Nope, everyone's going to sign. And they haven't backed away from that decision. So they don't realize that they've created more cobras. Like, get rid of this. We want the cobras gone. February, June, or July, or whatever you want to do, that would work.
Where do you think of these things? Or how?
No, that's a, that's a real thing. Like, it's called, like, the cobra effect or something. But I love that. Unintended consequences are just like a thing. I kind of like, people always like, well, he meant well. Like, yeah, sometimes you mean well, but you just do something dumb and you're like, you're not thinking it through. Just because you intended to help doesn't mean you're, like, forcing some action on everybody, and it doesn't necessarily help. We see that in the government kind of stuff all the time. But
I'm sure people in the chat could answer this, but why was this, is this better moving it up? Is it just easier for coaches to get it done a little bit sooner?
I think it was unfair for coaches that were still coaching, like in the playoffs and stuff. I think
so. Now everyone just gets screwed.
I think now they're, but now, yeah, it's like, well, what if you're in the your championship game?
Yeah.
Like, so if you're not in the championship game, you can, yeah. So this, it's just dumb. I think they didn't have time to, like, really space it out, like, really do, like, June, and I've heard them say three, like, they could do June, December, and, like, no, like, get rid of December. December needs to go bye-bye. Do early, and regular. Like, that's it. Like, that'll fix the problem. So.
And what about if June is too early, like, the middle of August? Yeah, you're right in the middle of camp, and that is probably hard, but you don't have to prepare for games at that point. Like, that would give recruits a little bit more time, and then it's not ideal, but I don't know. June just seems kind of early to me. Maybe the difference between June and August isn't that big, and there's not a lot happening in June. So
yeah,
so
I mean, summer, like, whatever. If you want to say June, July, August, I don't care. Like, just one of those times that's not December.
Yeah. Well,
before the season starts.
Well, you know why it's December, just not early enrollees.
But they don't need to sign anything. Like, you can always do that. Like, early enrollees just enroll. Like, they don't sign anything. Signing a letter of intent does seem dumb anyway. Like, what
so
is the
So you
point
can sign
it?
In February officially, but
no, no, you're
January?
Once you enroll, then you're in school. Like, then you're never they don't sign a letter of intent for those guys. So those guys just enroll. So they enroll in school. Yeah, so that's like a whole separate thing. And I think nowadays you don't need to sign a letter of intent because it does, you know, it locks you in. And you know, with transfers now, you can just transfer. But yeah, I mean, it seems like kind of dumb, and maybe it's an antiquated process. But before, like, guys didn't sign letter of intent if they were early enrollees. They just enrolled in school. You're already a student. So, like, you graduated high school early, and you just enroll. So the signing day was end up for the guys that were going to come over the summer.
And it was fine, like the scholarships and everything?
Yeah, so you could count – God, this got into the scholarship math. Yeah, the way it would count –
Just there's a way to do it.
Yeah, there was definitely a way to do it. I think when you signed early, if – I think you could take a scholarship of a player that was departing, but they wouldn't really be a head count, like an 85 counter until that summer. So they could enroll early – go through spring ball. As long as you had like an open scholarship coming, I believe that's how it's worked, man. I haven't gone through the scholarship math for that for a while, but yep, that's what we were thinking. That's all the topics I had. Did you have anything else? Anything else kind of interesting going on?
No, I'm excited for spring practice. The word on the street is we might get some very early spring practices, like earlier than USC's ever done, which made me think the first day of fall camp, Chris and I were on campus at like 5:30 a.m., so could it possibly earlier than that? Could they start at 6?
Danton Lynn mentioned early morning workouts too, yeah, that they're doing now. So maybe they're like do some early workouts. I think Riley tried to do a mix of them, right, in the fall. Like he had some super early, some in the afternoon. They kind of moved things around a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, early is nice because you get the rest of the day after, but then you're exhausted.
Yeah. No, it's definitely – I did two workouts this morning. Like I want to take a nap.
Two workouts?
I did a spin class at 6 and then a F45 at 7.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm way too old for this stuff, but there's like a challenge in my F45 gym, so I want to go like every day. Like I normally wouldn't go. I'd do a spin class. I'm like, I'm not going to do that, but I want to get the little star on the wall just because mm-hmm. that's the way my brain works. Almost done. Challenge, I think, is like 2 weeks away.
We're okay.
Almost done. So we'll see. I'll let
What's
you know.
What's the prize? Just free membership?
I don't know. Like I've lost 2 pounds of body fat in the first 4 weeks, so it's not bad.
Okay.
We'll see. Try to do that. Yeah, I don't think there's, and they might, I think they're gonna throw like a little party or something. Not that anybody cares about that. Yeah, I think that was it then. So that was fun getting to talk to Danton Lynn. Make sure you go over to uscfootball.com if you have not. If you're not a member, go sign up. You can sign up for $1. Come on. Like how, you can't get a, you know, no better deals than that. We got spring ball coming up, tons of content up on the site, spring ball previews, war room is gonna be coming up tomorrow. We're going to keep doing interviews like this. We will work with House of Victory again. We might have QB1 coming on the show soon. So, you know, stay tuned for that. Yeah. It'd be great. We, you know, having Jen Cohen on, having like Danton Lynn, we're going to keep getting you big guests coming from USC. So make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us live on YouTube, yeah, like the video, subscribe. We appreciate that. And you know, share it with your friends. And if you're not over at uscfootball.com, you definitely want to do that. If you want to do an annual membership, that's the best thing. You get 30% off when you sign up. And yeah, what is it, $70 or something? You'll have a great time all year. Know what's going on. Read Gerard stuff. Read Connor stuff. Chris's stuff. RJ stuff. My stuff. All the content we put up there. Tons of stuff. And the Peristyle, of course, is absolutely bonkers. You want to read all the insiders from there. Great stuff. Gavin Morris, you know him, very vocal USC, analyst over there, staffer. He was a Peristyle member for years. So it's just get in there, and a lot of people get involved in it. So it's been around a lot. Like I told Danton Lynn, like we've been doing this since 1996, which is absolutely crazy. Someone asked in the thread about a t-shirt. I had t-shirts made years ago. We should make them again. Decreasing workplace productivity since 1996. So that's uscfootball.com. So jump in there if you haven't been, if you're not a member or you were before and you want to get back into it, perfect time to do it. Make sure you go check it out. and let us know. We did have a question in the chat. Kevin says, can we get Coach Henderson on the show? That's a good one. We could, we can try to do that. We've had, assistants, over the years. And yeah, I think they're open to doing stuff like this. So yeah, I will, we'll do our best to try to get him on. I think he's someone that'd be very popular. We wanted to get, defensive coordinator on too. And, we'll try to get more people on, players, coaches, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's been great. Thanks to USC, Katie Ryan for setting this up. Does a great job over there. And yeah, we appreciate that. And we appreciate all of you. So for Connor Morissette, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
All right, we have 30 seconds.
Great, let's mention the cool new products at your neighborhood Trader Joe's.
We don't have enough time for all those.
Or we could talk about the crew.
We love the crew.
That we could have customers tell us about their new Trader Joe's recipes.
Did I mention we have 30 seconds?
See, this is why we have a podcast called Inside Trader Joe's, so that we have time to talk about all of those things.
30 seconds is up.
Inside Trader Joe's is available wherever you listen to podcasts, like this one.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.